The Alan Watts iPhone app is now available on the iTunes App Store, featuring the entire Alan Watts podcast series at your fingertips. Visit alanwattsapp.com for more information.
Now I want to contrast this image of the world with another. What I call the dramatic image, as distinct from the image of the potter, or the ceramic image. And this will be the presiding image of Hinduism. Their idea is this, that God didn't make the world like a technologist, but he acted it. That is to say, every person and everything, for that matter, every tree, every flower, every animal, every star, every rock, every grain of dust, is a role or part which the Godhead is playing. You must understand, of course, that the Hindu image of God is a little bit different from the Jewish, the Christian, and the Islamic. When I was a boy, little boy, I used to ask my mother interminable questions. And when she got sick of it, she said, "My dear, there are some things in this life that we're just not meant to know." Well, I said, "Will we ever know?" She said, "Yes. If you die and then go to heaven, God will explain it all." And so I used to hope that on wet afternoons in heaven, we would all be able to sit round the throne of grace and say to the Lord, "Why did you do this and why did you do that?" And he would explain. Every child in the West asks his mother, "How was I made?" And nobody knows, but they know that perhaps somebody does, and that'll be God, and he'll be able to explain. Likewise, if anybody gets mentally deranged and claims to be God, we always humor such people by asking them technical questions. How did you make the world in 6 days? Or if you're God, why couldn't you change this plate into a rabbit? But that is because, in our popular image of God, God is the supreme technocrat. He knows all the answers. He understands everything in detail and could tell you all about it. But the Hindus don't think of God that way. If you ask the Hindu god, "How did you create the human body?" he would say, "Look, I know how I did it, but it can't be explained in words, because words are too clumsy. In words, I have to talk about things slowly. I have to string them out, because words run in a line. And lines add up to books, and books add up to libraries. And if I explain to you how I made the human organism, it would take all eternity for me to tell you. Fortunately for me, I don't have to understand things in words in order to make them happen. Nor do you. You don't have to understand in words how you breathe. You just breathe. You don't have to understand in words how to grow your hair, how to shape your bones, how to make your eyes blue or brown. You just do it." And somebody who does understand, to some extent, maybe a physiologist, he can't do it any better than you can. So that, you see, is the Hindu idea of divine omnipotence. And that is why their images of the gods very often have many arms. You'll often see the god Shiva with 10 arms, or the Buddhist Avalokiteshvara with 1,000 arms. And that is because their image of the divine is a sort of centipede. A centipede can move 100 legs without having to think about it. So Shiva can move 10 arms very dexterously without having to think about it. And you know what happened to the centipede when it stopped to think how to move 100 legs. It got all balled up. So in this way, the Hindus do not think of God as being a technician in the sense of having a verbal or mathematical understanding of how the world is created. It's done in a simpler way, just like that. Only if we had to describe this simple way in words, it would be very complicated, but God, in their idea, doesn't need to do so. But the remarkable difference is that the Hindu doesn't see any fundamental division between God and the world. The world is God at play. The world is God acting. Now, how could you possibly arrive at such an idea? Very simply, when he tries to think why there is a world at all, because if you think about it, it is extraordinarily odd that there is anything. It would have been much simpler and required a great deal less energy for there to have been nothing. But here it is. And why? Well, what would you do if you were God? Or let me put it in a simpler way. Supposing that every night you could dream any dream you wanted to dream, what would you do? Well, first of all, I'm quite sure that most of us would dream all the marvelous things we wanted to happen. We would fulfill all our wishes. And we might go on that way for months. Besides, you could make it extraordinarily rich by wishing to dream 75 years in one night, full of glorious happenings. But after you had done that for a few months, you might begin to get a little tired of it. And you would say, what about an adventure tonight in which something terribly exciting and rather dangerous is going to happen, but I'll know I'm dreaming, so it won't be too bad. And I'll wake up if it gets too serious. So you do that for a while. You rescue princesses in distress from dragons and all sorts of things. And then when you've done that for some time, you say, now let's go out a bit further. Let's forget it's a dream and have a real thrill. Ooh. But you know you'll wake up. And then you get, after you've done that for a while, you get more and more nerve until you sort of dare yourself as to how far out you can get. And you end up dreaming the sort of life you're living now. Now, why does one do that? Why would one do that? The reason, the Hindu would say, is that the basic pulse of life, the basic motivation of existence, is what we call the game of hide and seek. Now you see it, now you don't. You see, everything's based on that, because all life is vibration, pulsing. Light is a pulsation of light darkness. Sound is a pulsation of sound silence. Everything is going at various speeds. And in order to have, say, it's like the motion of a wave. Now, a wave consists of two pulses, the crest and the trough. You can't have crests without troughs. You can't have troughs without crests. They always go together. You can't have hide without seek. You can't have seek without hide. Just for example, you can't have here without there. Because if you didn't know where there was, you wouldn't know where here was. You can't have is without isn't, because you don't know what you mean by is unless you also know what you mean by isn't, and vice versa. So in that way, they think that hide and seek is the fundamental game. As if the Lord, God, the Brahman, as they call it, said in the beginning, get lost, man. Disappear. And I'll find you again later. And then when you know the disappearance gets very far out, then the contrary rhythm begins, and the dreamer wakes up and finds out, whew, that was a relief. And then after a rest period, in which everything is, of course, at peace, it starts all over again, because the spirit of adventure springs eternal. Now then, the Hindus had extremely vast ideas of space and time for their period in history. And they have the theory that the hiding part of the game goes on for 4,320,000 years, a period called a kalpa, K-A-L-P-A in Sanskrit. And then the seek part, that is to say, let me put it this way, the dreaming part, is followed by the waking part. The dreaming is the hiding, where the Godhead imagines that it's all of us. Then for another 4,320,000 years, there's a period of awakening. And then at the end of that, again begins the dream. Now the dreaming period is further subdivided into four stages. The first stage is the longest, and it's the best. During that stage, the dream is beautiful. The second stage is not quite so long, and it's a little unsettling. There's an element of instability in it, a certain touch of insecurity. In the third stage, which is not, again, so long, the forces of light and the forces of darkness, of good and of evil, are equally balanced, and things are beginning to look rather dangerous. And in the fourth stage, which is the shortest of them all, the negative, dark, or evil side triumphs and the whole thing blows up in the end. But then that's like the bang in the dream, you know, when you get shot in a dream and you wake up and it was after all a dream. And so then there's a waking period before the whole thing starts again. And so the Hindus feel that behind the scene, that is to say, in reality, under the surface, you are all the actor. But behind the scenes, in the green room, you might say in the very back of your mind, in the very depths of your soul, you always have a very tiny sneaking suspicion that you might not be the you that you think you are.
Been listening to Alan Watts from the Spoken Word Library of the Electronic University. For copies of this and other Alan Watts programs, please go to alanwatts.com on the World Wide Web or call us toll-free at 1-800-WO-WATTS. That's alanwatts.com or 1-800-WO-WATTS. The Watts website features free audio downloads, program lists, and information on Watts' life and works. Once again, that's alanwatts.com or 1-800-WO-WATTS.